Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine others, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Tick tock, the clock drop. Rock, rock, body sock. Life had a meaning. At some point it went spleening. I don't know what the hell it meant, but it went that way. Hi, Jazzy.
What way?
The other way. Not quite left, but kind of right, and then went through the center, and then it went, excuse me, where am I? Oh, okay, I'm going that way.
Okay.
So, hey, did you know what?
Zombie apocalypse?
No, you're supposed to say chicken butt.
Oh, chicken butt?
Okay.
Wait a minute, I thought that was... Hey, guess what?
What?
Chicken butt.
Where? I'm hungry.
Why does this always have to go back to food? I'm starving
okay.
right now.
We just went over this a few seconds ago. Our show is called After Rot. The next show after this is called Free Pie. The show after this is called Mental Candy. It's all about the food. Feed me. Which is, as people should understand, my rallying call for the zombies. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the zombies. Hello, Matthew and Joe Dog and Jack in the chat room. How and Matthew? I said Matthew, didn't I? Yes, I did. How goes it all you and your worlds there? Be you of good hail, health, and all that fun stuff? See, he said so. I was paying attention. I am very sad today.
Why are you sad?
I got my comic book deliveries today. Got my big box of stuff. Got my big box of stuff. Got all kinds of other stuff. And only 3 comics for me. Very sad. Very sad.
Aww.
I sad.
Are
they good
comics, though?
Well, one of them is a very good comic. One of them is, well, it's shiny, and I'm concerned where it's going, but it's the first issue of a 10-part multi-series crossover thingy event for Marvel, which I will talk about later this afternoon, later the show. And then the other one is one that I think is probably the last one I collect in that series, because I don't know, care where they're going. Oh, well. Wowzers, gadzooks, and gee-giddy-giddy-gum-gum-gums. Sort of thing. Like all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's new and exciting in the world of zombies today? Nothing. Everybody's dead. Okay, moving on.
Aren't zombies always dead?
Yes. And we're getting deader by the minute. Ah!
That's what I thought.
Yep. 2 weeks shipping time. What is Joe talking about? Okay.
He's getting a zombie ship to him, you know?
No, he's getting some bad cheese.
Oh. No, don't get bad cheese.
Yes, and I think he's planning on giving it to Jack.
Okay, he can give it to Jack, as long as it's not me.
Okay.
Because I like cheese, and I don't like getting bad cheese.
Yeah, but do you like real cheese, or do you like American cheese?
Ew.
Oh, you've had American cheese, I take it.
Yeah. It's all fake.
It's plastic. It's plastic.
Exactly.
I don't know how anybody could eat it, but it's all plastic. But I came across a very interesting statistic yesterday that actually made me think, it's got nothing to do with cheese, though. Nothing to do with cheese. But 75% of the world's maple syrup is produced where? It's a trick question.
I feel like I'm going to be wrong with this, but I'm going to have to say Vermont.
You are so wrong.
Really? Isn't Vermont known for their maple syrup?
It might be known in some places, but the worldwide, it ain't.
Let me guess, Canada?
It is a place in Canada, that is correct.
Okay.
It is the province of the Belle Province de Quebec. 75% of the world's maple syrup production is from there. I was a little flabbergasted by that, because I knew they made a lot of maple syrup. It's a big business there. And the reason I was reading on this is because they were talking about interesting things that have been stolen. Bunch of odd different things. But there was this one heist that happened where they stole a couple of tractor trailers of maple syrup. Yeah, man, that stuff is liquid gold. It's pure gold on the streets.
Stealing maple syrup?
Yeah.
That seems ridiculous.
It does. Some of the other things they were talking about stealing big heists were even more ridiculous than that. I could see stealing maple syrup because, well, I like
it's
maple
delicious.
Syrup. It's delicious and nutritious and it's good for me.
Yummy.
Junkies. What? Why are the junkies drinking maple syrup? I see them drinking down Aqua Velva more than anything else. Ooh. Oh, you want to get the coolest head buzz ever without getting drunk?
What?
Chug a bottle of maple syrup.
I'll pass on that.
If you're diabetic, don't do that.
I mean, maple syrup is good,
you.
But not that good to me.
It's like, how many bucks? Holy crap. Maple syrup is expensive where Jack comes from. This is like $900. Holy crap. Oh, $9. Oh. Yeah, well, we're up here in Canada, eh? So it's like only three for us, ye? Not really. And people who think that stereotype permeates the entire society of Canada is like, wrong. Wrong. But that's also, again, for later in the show. However, do you know what? I was having so much fun reading stuff last week and the week before and other stuff like that. I decided I'm going to do another one today. Are you excited, Jazzy?
I am.
You're going to hear my voice just drone on and on and on.
I love story time.
Well, it's not story time, but it's me, speaky time. Yeah. So, this was by one of my other favorite writers by the name of Edgar Allan Poe. Born in 1809, passed away from this world in 1849. He didn't live very long. That's 40 years. I passed that already. And I had to think, the quality of my life versus the quality of his life at the ending of his expiration, much better off in my life than his, right? Are you still with me?
Dealing with noise issues.
Cats. Okay, cats. Gotcha.
Yeah, sure, we'll call it cat.
Alrighty then. So, we are going to go and do Diddling by Edgar Allan Poe. Hey, diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle. Since the world began, there have been two Jeremys. The one wrote a Jeremiad, about usury, and was called Jeremy Bentham. He has been much admired by Mr. John Neal, and was a great man in a small way. The other gave name to the most important of the exact sciences, and was a great man in a great way, I may say, indeed, in the very greatest of ways. Diddling, or the abstract idea conveyed by the verb to diddle, is sufficiently well understood. Yet the fact, the deed, the thing diddling, is somewhat difficult to define. We may get, however, at a tolerably distinct conception of the matter in hand by defining not the thing diddling in itself, but man as an animal that diddles. Had Plato hit upon this, he would have been spared the affront of the picked chicken. Yet, very pertinently, it was very demanded of Plato why a picked chicken, which was clearly a biped without feathers, was not, according to his own definition, a man. But I am not to be bothered by any similar query. Man is an animal that diddles, and there is no animal that diddles but man. It will take an entire hen coop of picked chickens to get over that. What constitutes the essence, the nair, the principle of diddling is in fact peculiar to the class of creatures that wear coats and pantaloons. A crow thieves, a fox cheats, a weasel outwits, a man diddles. To diddle is his destiny. Man was made to mourn, says the poet, but not so. He was made to diddle. This is his aim, his object, his end. And for this reason, when a man's diddled, he says, it's done. Diddling, rightly considered, is a compound of which the ingredients are minuteness, interest, perseverance, ingenuity, audacity, nonchalance, originality, impertinence, and grin. Minuteness. Your diddler is minute. His operations are upon a small scale. His business is retail, for cash or approved paper at sight. Should he ever be tempted into magnificent speculation, he then, at once, loses his distinctive features and becomes what we term financier. This later word conveys the diddling idea in every respect except that of magnitude. A diddler may thus be regarded as a banker in petto, a financial operation as a diddle at Brobdingnag. The one is to the other as Homer to Flaccus, as a mastodon to a mouse, as the tail of a comet to that of a pig. Interest. Your diddler is guided by self-interest. He scorns to diddle for the mere sake of the diddle. He has an object in view, his pocket and yours. He regards always the main chance. He looks to number one. You are number two, and must look to yourself. Perseverance. Your diddler perseveres. He is not readily discouraged. Should even the banks break, he cares nothing about it. He steadily pursues his end. And ut canis acorio nunquam absterdiretto uncto. So he never lets go of his game. Ingenuity. Your diddler is ingenious. He has constructiveness large. He understands plot. He invents and circumvents. Were he not Alexander, he would be Diogenes. Were he not a diddler, he would be a maker of patent rat traps or an angler for trout. Audacity. Your diddler is audacious. He is a bold man. He carries the war into Africa. He conquers all by assault. He would not fear the daggers of Frey Heron. With a little more prudence, Dick Turpin would have made a good diddler. With a trifle less blarney, Daniel O'Connell. With a pound or two more brains, Charles XII. Nonchalance. Your diddler is nonchalant. He is not at all nervous. He never had any nerves. He is never seduced into a flurry. He is never put out unless put out of doors. He is cool, cool as a cucumber. He is calm, calm as a smile from Lady Bury. He is easy, easy as an old glove or the damsels of ancient Spy. Originality. Your diddler is original, conscientiously so. His thoughts are his own. He would scorn to employ those of another. A stale trick is his aversion. He would return a purse, I am sure, upon discovering that he had obtained it by an unoriginal diddle. Impertinence. Your diddler is impertinent. He swaggers. He sets his arms akimbo. He thrusts his hands in his trousers pockets. He sneers in your face. He treads on your corns. He eats your dinner. He drinks your wine. He borrows your money. He pulls your nose. He picks your poodle. And he kisses your wife. Grin. Your true diddler winds up all with a grin. But this nobody sees but himself. He grins when his daily work is done, when his allotted labors are accomplished, at night, in his own closet, and altogether for his own private entertainment. He goes home. He locks his door. He divests himself of his clothes. He puts out his candle. He gets into bed. He places his head upon the pillow. All this done, and your diddler grins. This is no hypothesis. It is a matter of course. I reason a priori, and a diddle would be no diddle without a grin. The origin of the diddle is referable to the infancy of the human race. Perhaps the first diddler was Adam. At all events, we can trace the science back to a very remote period of antiquity. The moderns, however, have brought it to a perfection never dreamed of by our thick-headed progenitors. Without pausing to speak of the old saws, therefore I shall content myself with a compendious account of some of the more modern instances. A very good diddle is this. A housekeeper, in want of a sofa, for instance, is seen to go in and out of several cabinet warehouses. At length, she arrives at one offering an excellent variety. She accosted and invited to enter by a polite and voluble individual at the door. She finds a sofa well adapted to her views, and upon inquiring the price, is surprised and delighted to hear a sum named at least 20% lower than her expectations. She hastens to make the purchase, gets a bill and receipt, leaves her address with a request that the article be sent home as speedily as possible, and retires amid a profusion of bows from the shopkeeper. The night arrives, and no sofa. A servant is sent to make inquiry about the delay. The whole transaction is denied. No sofa has been sold, no money received, except by the diddler, who played shopkeeper for the nonce. Our cabinet warehouses are left entirely unattended, and thus afford every facility for a trick of this kind. Visitors enter, look at furniture, and depart unheeded and unseen. Should anyone wish to purchase or to inquire the price of an article, a bell is at hand, and this is considered amply sufficient. Again, quite a respectable diddle is this. A well-dressed individual enters a shop, makes a purchase to the value of a dollar, finds, much to his vexation, that he has left his pocketbook in another coat pocket, and so says to the shopkeeper, "My dear sir, never mind, just oblige me, will you, by sending the bundle home? But stay, I really believe that I have nothing less than a $5 bill, even there. However, you can send $4 in change with the bundle, you know." "Very good, sir," replies the shopkeeper, who entertains at once a lofty opinion of the high-mindedness of his customer. "I know fellows," he says to himself, "who would just have put the goods under their arm and walked off with a promise to call and pay the dollar as they came by in the afternoon." A boy is sent with the parcel and change. On the route, quite accidentally, he is met by the purchaser, who exclaims, "Ah! This is my bundle, I see. I thought you had been home with it long ago. Well, go on. My wife, Mrs. Trotter, will give you the $5. I left instructions with her to that effect. The change you might as well give to me. I shall want some silver for the post office. Very good. 1, 2, is this a good quarter? 3, 4, quite right. Say to Mrs. Trotter that you met me, and be sure now and do not loiter on the way." The boy doesn't loiter at all, but he is very long time getting back from his errand, for no lady of the precise name of Miss Trotter is to be discovered. He consoles himself, however, that he has not been such a fool as to leave the goods without the money, and re-entering his shop with a self-satisfied air, feels sensibly hurt and indignant when his master asks him what has become of the change. A very simple diddle indeed this is. The captain of a ship which is about to sail is presented by an official-looking person with an unusually moderate bill of city charges. Glad to get off so easily, and confused by 100 duties pressing upon him all at once, he discharges the claim forthwith. In about 15 minutes, another and less reasonable bill is handed him by one who soon makes it evident that the first collector was a diddler, and the original collection a diddle. And here, too, is a somewhat similar thing. A steamboat is casting loose from the wharf. A traveller, portmanteau in hand, is discovered running toward the wharf at full speed. Suddenly, he makes a dead halt, stops, and picks up something from the ground in a very agitated manner. It is a pocketbook. "And has any gentleman lost a pocketbook?" he cries. No one can say that he has exactly lost a pocketbook, but a great excitement ensues. When the treasure trove is found to be of value, the boat, however, must not be detained. "Time and tide wait for no man," says the captain. "For God's sake, stay only for a few minutes," says the finder of the book. "The true claimant will presently appear." "Can't wait," replies the man in authority. "Cast off there, do you hear?" "What am I to do?" asks the finder in great tribulation. "I am about to leave the country for some years, and I cannot conscientiously retain this large amount in my possession. I beg your pardon, sir," and here he addresses a gentleman on shore, "but you have the air of an honest man. Will you confer upon me the favor of taking charge of this pocketbook? I know I can trust you, and of advertising it? The notes, you see, amount to a very considerable sum. The owner will no doubt insist upon rewarding you for your trouble. Me, no, you. It was you who found the book." "Well, if you must have it so, I will take a small reward, just to satisfy your scruples. Let me see. Why, these notes are all hundreds. Bless my soul, 100 is too much to take. 50 would be quite enough, I'm sure." "Cast off there," says the captain. but then I have no change for 100, and upon the whole you had better... Cast off there, says the captain. Never mind, cries the gentleman on shore, who has been examining his own pocketbook for the last minute or so. Never mind, I can fix it. Here's a 50 on the Bank of North America. Throw the book! And the over-conscientious finder takes the 50 with marked reluctance and throws the gentleman the book as desired, while the steamboat fumes and fizzes on her way. In about half an hour her departure, the large amount is seen to be a counterfeit presentment, and the whole thing a capital diddle. A bold diddle is this one. A camp meeting, or something similar, is to be held at a certain spot which is accessible only by means of a free bridge. A diddler stations himself upon this bridge, respectfully informs all passers-by of the new county law, which establishes a toll of 1 cent for per foot passenger, 2 for horses and donkeys, and so forth, and so forth. Some grumble, but all submit, and the diddler go home, a wealthier man, by some $50 or $60 well earned. This taking a toll from a great crowd of people is an excessively troublesome thing. A neat diddle is this one. A friend holds one of the diddler's promises to pay, filled up and signed in due form, upon the ordinary blanks printed in red ink. The diddler purchases 1 or 2 dozen of these blanks, and every day dips one of them in his soup, makes his jog jump for it, and finally gives it to him as a bonne bouche. The note, arriving at maturity, the diddler, with his diddler's dog, calls upon the friend, and the promise to pay is made the topic of discussion. The friend produces it from his escritoire, and is in the act of reaching it to the diddler, when up jumps the dog and devours it forthwith. The diddler is not only surprised, but vexed and incensed at the absurd behavior of his dog, and expresses his entire readiness to cancel the obligation at any moment when the evidence of the obligation shall be forthcoming. A very mean diddle is this. A lady is insulted in the street by a diddler's accomplice. The diddler himself flies to her assistance, and giving his friend a comfortable thrashing, insists upon attending the lady to her own door. He bows, with his hand upon his heart, and most respectfully bids her adieu. She entreats him, as her deliverer, to walk in and be introduced to her big brother and her papa. With a sigh, he declines to do so. "Is there no way, then, sir," she murmurs, "in which I may be permitted to testify my gratitude?" "Why, yes, madam, there is. Will you be so kind enough to lend me a couple of shillings?" In the first excitement of the moment, the lady decides upon fainting outright. Upon second thought, however, she opens her purse strings and delivers the specie. Now this, I say, is a diddle. Minute for entire moiety of the sum borrowed has to be paid to the gentleman who had the trouble of performing the insult, and who had then to stand still and be thrashed for performing of it. Rather a small, but still a scientific diddle is this. The diddler approaches the bar of a tavern, and demands a couple of twists of tobacco. These are handed to him. When having slightly examined them, he says, "I don't much like this tobacco. Here, take it back, and give me a glass of brandy and water in its place." The brandy and water is furnished and imbibed, and the diddler makes his way to the door. But the voice of the tavern keep arrests him. "I believe, sir, you have forgotten to pay for your brandy and water." "Pay for my brandy and water? Didn't I give you the tobacco for the brandy and water? What more would have you?" "But, sir, if you please, I don't remember that you paid me for the tobacco." "What do you mean by that, you scoundrel? Didn't I give you back your tobacco? Isn't that your tobacco lying there? Do you expect me to pay for what I did not take?" "But, sir," says the publican, now rather at a loss what to say, "but, sir..." "But me no but, sir," interrupts the diddler, apparently in very high dudgeon, and shaming the other after him as he makes his escape. "But me no but, sir, and none of your tricks upon travellers." Here again is a very clever diddle, of which the simplicity is not its least recommendation. A purse or pocketbook being really lost, the loser inserts in one of the daily papers of a large city a fully descriptive advertisement. Advertisement. Either way. Whereupon our diddler copies the facts of this advertisement with change of heading of general phraseology and address. The original, for instance, is long and verbose, is headed, "A pocketbook lost," and requires the treasure, when found, to be left at number 1 Tom Street. The copy is brief, and being headed with Lost Only indicates Number 2 Dick or Number 3 Harry Street as the locality at which the owner may be seen. Moreover, it is inserted in at least 5 or 6 of the daily papers of the day, while in point of time it makes its appearance only a few hours after the original. Should it be read by the loser of the purse, he would hardly suspect it to have any reference to his own misfortune. But, of course, the chances are 5 or 6 to 1 that the finder will repair to the address given by the diddler, rather than to that pointed out by the rightful proprietor. The former pays the reward, pockets the treasure, and decamps. I'm going to skip down to a little more far to the end, because this is quite long. The really good one I liked at the end here. Right there. But as there is really no end to diddling, so there would seem none to this essay, were I even to hint at half the variations or inflections of which this science is susceptible, I must bring this paper perforce to a conclusion. And this I cannot do better than by a summary notice of a very decent, but rather elaborate diddle, of which our own city was made the theatre, not very long ago, and which was subsequently repeated with success in other still more verdant localities of the Union. A middle-aged gentleman arrives in town from parts unknown. He is remarkably precise, cautious, staid, and deliberate in his demeanour. His dress is scrupulously neat, but plain, unostentatious. He wears a white cravat, an ample waistcoat made with an eye to comfort alone, thick-soled, cozy-looking shoes, and pantaloons without straps. He has the whole air, in fact, of your well-to-do, sober-sided, exact, and respectable man of business, par excellence. One of the stern and outwardly hard, internally soft sort of people that we see in the crack, high comedies, fellows whose words are so many bonds, and who are noted for giving away guineas, in charity, with the one hand, while in the other, the way of mere bargain, they exact the uttermost fraction of a farthing with the other. He makes much ado before he can get suited with a boarding house. He dislikes children. He has been accustomed to quiet. His habits are methodical, and then he would prefer getting into a private and respectable small family, piously inclined. Terms, however, are no object. Only he must insist upon settling his bill on the 1st of every month. It is now the 2nd. And begs his landlordy, when he finally obtains one to his mind, not on any account to forget his instructions upon this point, but to send in a bill and receipt precisely at 10 o'clock on the 1st day of every month, and under no circumstances to put it off to the 2nd. These arrangements made, our man of business rents an office in a reputable rather than fashionable quarter of the town. There is nothing he more despises than pretense. Where there is much show, he says, there is seldom anything very solid behind, an observation which so profoundly impresses his landlady's fancy that she makes a pencil memorandum of it forthwith, in her great family Bible on the broad margin of the Proverbs of Solomon. The next step is to advertise, after some such fashion as this, in the principal business 6 pennies of the city. The pennies are eschewed as not respectable, and as demanding payment for all advertisements in advance. Our man of business holds it as a point of his faith that work should never be paid for until done. Wanted, the advertisers, being about to commence extensive business operations in the city, will require the services of 3 or 4 intelligent and competent clerks, to whom a liberal salary will be paid. The very best recommendations, not so much for capacity as for integrity, will be expected. Indeed, as the duties to be performed involve high responsibilities and large amounts of money, must necessarily pass through the hands of those engaged, it is deemed advisable to demand a deposit of $50 from each clerk employed. No person need apply, therefore, who is not prepared to leave the sum in the possession of the advertisers, and who cannot furnish the most satisfactory testimonials of morality. Young gentlemen piously inclined will be preferred. Application should be made between the hours of 10 and 11 a.m. and 4 and 5 p.m. of Messrs. Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company, Number 110 Dog Street. By the 31st day of the month, this advertisement has brought to the office of Messrs. Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company some 15 or 20 young gentlemen piously inclined. But our man of business is in no hurry to conclude a contract with any. No man of business is ever precipitate, and it is not until the most rigid catechism in respect to the piety of each young gentleman's inclination that his services are engaged and his $50 receipted for, just by way of proper precaution on the part of the respectable firm of Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company. On the morning of the first day of the next month, the landlady does not present her bill. According to her promise, a piece of neglect for which the comfortable head of the house ending in Oggs would no doubt have chided her severely, could he have been prevailed upon to remain in town a day or two for that purpose. As it is, the constables have had a sad time of it, running hither and thither, and all they can do is to declare the man of business most emphatically a hen knee high, by which some persons imagine them to imply that, in fact, he is N-E-I, by which, again, the very classical phrase non est inventus is supposed to be understood. In the meantime, the young gentlemen, one and all, are somewhat less piously inclined than before, while the landlady purchases a shilling's worth of the Indian rubber and very carefully obliterates the pencil memorandum that some fool has made in her great family Bible on the broad margin of the Proverbs of Solomon. The end. That is Diddling by Edgar Allan Poe. And...
Diddling?
Yes. Hi, I'm Zombie Zach, and I'd like to take a quick moment and explain that during our live broadcast, which is every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we normally have a song, a tune, a ditty of some merit playing midway through our show. This is where it would normally be. During the live broadcast, we have what is called a broadcast license. The station pays a fee to the world of digital rights and all that fun stuff that allows us to legally play music while we broadcast our show. However, in this medium, recorded and rebroadcast as we are here, we do not have that a license to allow us to play that music. We can get away with a sample of the song that we played, no more than that. We support artists and their right to get paid for the hard work that they put into creating the music that they create and which we enjoy. Show your support of musicians. Buy their music. Today's show featured... Winona's Big Brown Beaver by Primus. And now, we return back to our regular show and all of its attendant fun and frivolity. Well, that was Primus, a band that I particularly enjoy quite a bit. And that was Winona's Brown Beaver. Because, you know...
Beaver?
Yes, Winona found herself a beaver one day and then turned around after a while of time of enjoying the company of said beaver and found out it was a smart-ass porcupine!
I like porcupine better anyway.
Okay. Spiky, much? Yes.
Only when you anger them or pet them the wrong way.
There's only one way to pet a porcupine, and that's away from the head.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go the other way, you're going to get stuck. Boing, boing, boing. So, did you enjoy that reading I did of Edgar Allan Poe's Diddling?
I did.
Did you get the answers to... Did you understand what diddling meant and referred to?
Not really.
The art of con. Conning people.
Okay.
So... Diddling is mostly an expression used back then as to how to con somebody out of their hard-earned money. And by reference, bearing in mind that a penny nowadays was worth a hell of a lot more back then than it is now. And 6 pennies, well, that's like crap. That's like a couple of dollars.
You're rich.
Well, the $50 when he was talking about in the one con was like, whoa, that's like a small fortune to some people. So... I like Edgar Allan Poe. He's weird. You know, it just kind of, it goes with me. I like it. I dig it. I can, roll with it. He writes some of the weirdest stuff. We all know The Raven, some classic poetry that he did. Telltale Never Heart, Been. Nevermore, yes, all that. But he was also, as Helene mentioned in the chat room, an interior decorator as well.
Was he really?
That was his job. That was his regular job thing.
I don't know if I would want him doing my interior decoration.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say. Because the reason why I brought that up is because I read one of his reviews of some rich hoity-toity's place that he'd done the review of. And man, did he ever make clear he could not stand the place. Thought it was completely gauche, terrible, horrible, overly well done with... And look at these bright shades of puce and... Oh my god, the colors! They just blend with... not in a very good fashion. And it was like, that was just cool. He was mean. It was like, he ripped this guy's place a new one without even opening so much as a... yeah, this is just awful, isn't it? Well, he didn't really have an accent like that. I just throw that in there because I think it's funny. So we are in part two of our show. We are going to talk now, or I'm going to rant a little bit, and then we'll talk and discuss as well. But here, this is the beginning of the issue. At hand, who, and people are welcome to express their opinions in the manner, either shape or form, however they might like to. Do you guys, and that includes you, Jazzy, think that humanity should survive the zombie apocalypse?
Can we pick specific people to survive?
Okay, let us rephrase this. There are a lot of individual people that I like, that I have met in my life, and personally on Facebook, other places in real life, all over the place, that are great people. I like them. They're nice, they're happy, they're friendly, they're good. Thousands of people that I would say, these are good people. But when I look at humanity as a whole, all of humanity, all 6.5 billion people on this planet, mudballs certain around the... floating this little sun going wee right now. No, you don't get to pick specifics. All or nothing.
Okay, so it's all or nothing?
Yep.
That's a tough one.
Yes, it is.
It's a tough one because
you're gonna have to think about that one.
It's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
It's all or nothing.
You've got 20 seconds. Tick tock. Tick,
and
tock,
I have to condemn tick, a whole tick, humanity.
Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Which one would be the more environmentally friendly? Well, that would all depend on your perspective and intent to decide whether or not environment is changeable, modifiable, a development of evolution that says, hey, even technology is part of that evolutionary scale. Responding to Matthew's comment in the chat room. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Talk.
Why do I have to be the one to decide?
Because you're the co-host.
Can't EW decide?
EW's not here.
He's the radio station owner.
He's watching squirrels. Tick.
EW,
talk,
stop watching the squirrels.
Talk. Well, at least they're not flying squirrels. Because that would be just weird.
Or devil monkeys.
You know, devil monkeys! The chat room is also available to option comment on this too, you know, people.
Oh, Alan's here.
Alan is there. He can comment as well.
Answer this. I need your comment. Should humanity as a whole endure a zombie apocalypse?
Now, let's look at a couple of pros and cons. All right? Pros. The biggest pro for me that I can comfortably say without any hesitation about humanity is cookies. Humanity has created cookies. This is a big pro for me, okay? This is the one thing that, of anything else, has helped keep humanity still safe from the zombie apocalypse. That's
It's because we have food source.
As Alan says, food. It is keeping us zombies away from going and looking for a different food source other than the cookies. Now, a con... Okay, here's a big one. Driving on roads in this city or any other city in general and having to deal with people who are a bunch of butt munches that don't know how to drive. You have a turn signal on your vehicle.
Oh my god.
Use the turn signal.
Don't even get me started on that.
Okay.
No.
You see? See? See where I'm going with this? Why would I think that humanity could survive when I drive through traffic every day, twice a day, minimum twice a day, possibly even four times a day, every day, and deal with over several million people who are all on the city roads all at the same time, right? So, that's one of the cons. That's one of the pros. What else do we got here as a con and a pro?
Well, people that can't drive in snow and ice.
That's all part of the same con. People who can't drive, period. Come on, Jazzy, you gotta give me a pro. Because it's getting hard here to outweigh the cookies versus bad drivers. You should have seen this guy driving, and I had pissed me off today. I'm driving.
We're bringing duct tape.
I don't need the duct tape.
Yes, you do.
No. She made a duck face, so he gave her duct tape.
Your arm fell off the other day. We had to duct tape it on.
No, no. I took copper wire and wired it around. Just went kink, 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 kink. So, come on, Jazzy. A pro and a con. Chat room, come on. Give me some pros and cons here.
You know, there goes the W. Important. He says lose the zombies, then we don't have to suffer anymore.
That is both... That's a pro. Is there a con anywhere in there? I don't see one. So now we have two pros and one con. Wait, the other way around. Those are two pros. That's one con. Oh, you
Wait,
guys.
What?
No more sick people. That would also be a pro. That's three pros. No cons. One con. All you guys are doing are giving me pros for the apocalypse here. I'm saying. These are all my points of, yep, no more hunger. Compost. No more bills. No more work. These are all pros for a zombie apocalypse. Actually, Matthew, eventually the hunger would succumb to absence. We would stop being hungry, too. Because there would be nothing else to eat. So then it would be a matter of decay. By the way, zombies are the world's ultimate antivirus.
Oh?
Yes. We kill the infection. Do you know what the infection is?
We kill other stuff, too.
But do you know what the infection is?
Maybe.
Humanity is the infection. And zombies are the antivirus. We're going to kick them all
out. Zombies kill the humanity.
Oh, the zombanity of it all. Come on. This is my major rant of the day. I think that humanity deserves a zombie apocalypse. I think that there are some awesomely beautiful things that humanity has done. We got music. We got dance. We got poetry. We got works of art. We got works of wonder. We have hands crafted by amazing minds.
You wouldn't have any of that without humanity, though.
However, offset by the enormous amount of mediocrity, stupidity, inanity, and just downright, what is you people, dumb kind of things. Where's the balance measure? Where does it stop? Where does it start? Zombie apocalypse wipes out humanity. Okay. They made a bunch of music and some great pretty things, but those great pretty things are going to remain after we wipe humanity off the face of the planet. Right? I hear cookies.
Yep, cookies. I bring you cookies. What can I say?
Okay, now, the cookies are only going to keep the zombies at bay for long... How long? How much longer do you humans think that those cookies are going to keep us away? We are going to eat everybody's face off. Everybody's. Even the weird guy in the back corner, he's... Well, we may not eat his face off. We might just bowl him over and throw him into a barrel and roll him over the waterfall. No? I'm still not hearing any pros here.
Not the waterfall.
Well, I'm still not hearing a sufficient argument in success for saving humanity from the zombies. Well, Randy's still, he's good. He's got the cookies. Jack has posted a really interesting query there. I will have to think about that for a second. Name another species that endeavors to save a species that isn't them. Huh. Wow, that's a positive thinky-think in humanities column. I'm sorry, Jack, but I'm going to throw you a negative to offset that positive. Honey Boo Boo.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Honey Boo Boo outweighs all of humanity's endeavors to save any species that's not them. Honey Boo Boo offsets that. Oh, and to add another checkbox to that, what's that TV show? Jersey Shore. Oh, and Justin Bieber. Oh.
Wait, Justin Bieber came from Canada, though.
Yes, but who made him famous? Canada? No.
I didn't make him famous.
America made him famous.
I didn't make him famous.
The attention spawning saps of the world who said, "Oh, look at him, he's such a cute little kid, and he can sing. Isn't that just the sweetest thing? Oh, make him famous, let's watch his video." That's who made him famous. That's humanity. That's a component of the key issue that I'm getting at that says, well, you know what? I think maybe humanity's done. That it's been in the oven long enough. Turn that dial off. Let's eat it.
PW, eat him.
Exactly. I don't know if I want to eat him. He's weird.
Give him to your other zombies.
Oh, and Alan raises another negative. The people of Walmart. Although he's thinking they're zombies. They're not zombies. They're chitlins of zombies. Yeah. So, we still don't have a resolution here to the equation. Sneaky wants knows who's going to clean up off this mess. His owner just screamed reality TV and shot himself. Exactly! Precisely my point. Reality TV is... Oh! There are so many things I could talk about net reality TV that I just... we have only 10 minutes left in the show. We can't... Humans are interesting? Okay. I could buy a little bit of entertainment value on the diversity, the whole... No, Hellion, that's the isle, as in the island.
Clean up on Island 4?
Yes. Human diversity and individuality and that whole concept of non-speciation and how things can be interesting by just watching... I can watch ants do that. I can watch cats do that. Dogs. Mooses. Mooses are fun to watch, by the way. Really don't get in their way. So, still looking at the thing. We got reality TV, bad drivers, against art, creative stuffs.
There's so much more art and creative stuffs.
And cookies. And don't forget the cookies.
There are bad drivers. And cookies.
What do you mean there are so much more bad?
And pies.
I don't like pie.
Okay, you don't have to have the pie.
I don't want pie.
But what about cake?
I like cake.
Okay. What about ice cream?
I like ice cream, too. And sorbet.
And what about ice cream cake?
I can eat that.
Cookie ice cream cake.
Or better yet, a cookie ice cream with cake, with a sorbet, and tasty soda in a float. Very good and tasty, yummy stuff, good for my belly. Make me stop and say, oh, okay, I'll stop for a second. But, you know, that's fleeting. It only lasts for so long. What happens after that?
But you're not going to have that without humanity.
But then I will sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Maybe. I don't know.
But you dream of cookies and cake.
And sometimes...
And then you'd be sad because then you wouldn't have any humanity to make you cookies and cake.
And to the ancients, the dream is enough.
Until the dream becomes a nightmare.
There are no nightmares. Nightmares are only people who run away from their dreams. Whee! Run away! Run away! Run away! Watching complex interactions between people riffing and ripping each other in amusing ways. Yes, see, I enjoy that. However, one has to understand the very nature of doing that, which we called, by the way, diddling earlier in the show, is diddling. Haha, to use an 1840s expression. I love that expression, by the way, because it means something else completely right now in today's lexicon. Sure, we can derive a great deal of joy in watching random people doing random stuff. Hellion has reminded me that we need to plug something. Nightmare is the name of the horse's head and thing and picture on the cover of the book What Scares the Boogeyman? Both myself, Jack, and Hellion have stories in this book. You should check it out, by Perseid Press. Awesome stuff. Edited by John Manning and his talented crew of people. Bong. So, we have art, food, meaning
music.
Something. Art, that's art. Meaning, full interactions of people, entertainment value, as opposed to bad drivers, reality TV. What's my third thing I'm going to put down here as a con? The interwebs.
The interwebs?
Oh my god, the drama. The drama. The inhumanity of it all, where people have their lives played out on Facebook, MySpace, and all those other places of electronic space. And they are so sad when their lives are, oh, nobody cares. I'm just venting on that because there are so many people on Facebook, and it's just a computer forum, basically. It's, you say what you want to say, be happy, do whatever the hell you want. Don't be sad because somebody did something bad. My favorite meme is, oh, somebody said something wrong on the internet, I have to fix it. It's like, dude, really? Seriously? Everything is wrong on the internet, because the internet in and of itself is wrong, created by humanity. That's it. I might start the zombie apocalypse now.
No.
Where's my button?
Have a cookie.
Button. I have three cookies. I have three cookies right there. I'm going to eat them as soon as I hang up here and we finish the show. Three cookies and a Coca-Cola and a bottle of water.
Just don't hit the button.
I can't find the button right now. I'm looking for the button. As I find that button, the zombie apocalypse is starting, man. Because I'm sorry, those cons, they outweigh the pros right now. Nobody's been able to give me a sufficient argument here.
I disagree.
Really?
Yes.
You disagree?
Yes.
Do you have the button?
You can ignore the idiots on the road and the idiots on Facebook. You can choose what to pay attention to. So ignore what you don't like and pay attention to the things you do like cookies and cakes and art.
So are you saying that goodwill and free choice and the ability to rise above mediocrity is a good thing?
Yes.
Where's my button?
Really?
So, what would say would be, what I paraphrase as saying, be brightness? Jack doesn't like this part, so Jack, don't listen to this portion. Hello? Are you there? Are you still
I'm
there?
Here.
Are you sure?
I'm here.
So,
I'm here.
Are you proposing that everybody be happy? Be bright?
Well, I mean, you're going to have your moments where you're not so happy. but you have to rise above that yourself and decide, I'm going to change. I'm going to become happy.
And what about...
otherwise, you're just going to wallow in self-pity and, woe is me. Nothing's right in the world.
I love that expression, woe is me, by the way. So, what about those people who wallow in their negative, pile of self-vomit and miscellaneous miscreanticism?
Too bad for them, because they're not living then.
Then are they zombies?
Maybe.
Are they living dead or dead dead or unliving living?
I don't know.
Okay. So, let's sum at. You would like everybody to be able to get over the negative and embrace the positive with no foreknowledge of knowing that no matter what one does, there's going to be moments of negative, no matter what one does, what one can do, but one can always get past that to something more positive.
They have to choose to get past it themselves.
Okay, and what if they choose not to?
Then that's their fault. They chose not to.
So, as a considerate civilization of happy, inclusive individuals, should we keep that person part of it?
Well, I mean, what are we going to do? Throw them to the wolves?
Throw them to the zombies?
Throw them to the zombies, sure. But you told me all or nothing. I couldn't pick certain people.
So you're saying we should not start the zombie apocalypse?
Correct.
Well, your arguments have some merit. I would say that with that attitude, if more people could embrace it, there might be a possibility that the apocalypse would not start. However, I think we're going to have to shelve the rest of the discussion because we are running into the next show, which is...
Free pie!
Pie! Everybody, thanks for coming along and enjoying our wonderful little hour-long rant and fun stuff and all that other fun stuff. And enjoy, and see you next week.
See you next week.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pick. Pick,